It's Talk of Iowa on Iowa Public Radio. I'm Jason Burns, in for Charity Nevy. It's Horticulture Day, and today we're talking strawberries, because summer is a time of rest and relaxation, but for a lot of people it might be a time for strawberries baked into things on top of ice cream, or just rinsed off and out of the garden. With June-bearing strawberries getting ready to be picked, we're here to help you make the most of strawberry prime time. Joining me is Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens, Aaron Stile. Aaron, good morning.
Hello.
And Richard Giron from ISU's Horticulture Extension. Richard, good morning.
Good morning.
And so June-bearing strawberries, it is in the name, and we are very close to June.
Right.
And so we can probably expect to start seeing June-bearing strawberries in gardens, but also all different varieties at farmers markets very, very soon.
In a few days, yes.
Yeah.
So when we are out there in the farmers market, there's stand after stand, there's all sorts of different lovely displays of produce. Are there things we should be looking for in particular when we want the best of the best in terms of strawberries?
They should be fully ripe, so they should be completely red. You don't want something that's maybe a little bit white or pinkish. You want something completely red. Make sure there's no blemishes or bruises on them. So basically nice, clean, ripe fruit.
Excellent. And are there any differences that are noticeable to the naked eye in terms of the different varieties? Or, I mean, is it very easy to tell a June-bearing strawberry from other varieties? And do they have any different taste, really? Or are they all... Because I think for a lot of people who aren't growing them, strawberries are strawberries.
Right. You really have to taste them to tell the difference. Yeah. Just looking at them, you really can't tell. But as soon as you taste them, you have the sweetness, the texture, and so then you get some idea as far as, are they really good? Because what you buy in the store, they look good, mm-hmm. but they were grown probably in California, Florida, maybe Mexico, and those varieties are good for shipping. They withstand shipping very well, so they tend not to be the most sweet, but they are nice and firm, and they do ship.
Mm-hmm. And is it pretty similar to what you see with apple varieties? You know, the kind of the same thing. The ones you see in the market may be, again, grown to ship, but probably not the tastiest.
Right. Pretty. And they ship well.
Right.
But maybe not taste well. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's also a huge range in sizes in strawberries. Just the other day when I was in the supermarket, I saw, you know, a gigantic strawberries.
Yeah.
But when I bit into those didn't seem quite as flavorful. Is that generally a rule, too, that if you have these giant strawberries, they may be sacrificing some flavor just for size?
Well, some of the actual large varieties that produce large fruit, they actually have a pretty good taste. But if you're looking for a variety for your home garden, there's a variety called Early Glow, which most people consider to be a very, very tasty berry. If fruit size is your big thing, then I'd probably suggest All-Star, which is a very common variety, very large fruit. If you want something that is very productive as far as plants, then I would look for Honey Eye. So it depends on what you're looking for when you're buying plants.
Okay. And so if you want to go the route of making sure you're buying local, that you're getting berries right out of the patch, you know, are there some good resources to find some local growers near you if you want to buy something between when your farmer's market is open?
Right. The Iowa Fruit and Vegetable Growers Association has a webpage, and you can go there and you can click on strawberries, and that brings up all the growers that actually do sell strawberries.
And a lot of those, too, might do, they probably have strawberries just to buy, but you could also maybe do some pick your own, right?
Right, possibly, yes.
Mm-hmm. Which we were talking about before the show, maybe waning a little bit in popularity, but still really good for the kids, I think.
It's fun to go out there and pick some berries. You can actually sample a few as you do that, but some people don't have the time, so...
I do know that my 3.5-year-old came back from a daycare field trip, and they did that, and it was all he could talk about for several days afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
So I can speak from experience that very good for the kids. So let's shift a little bit in terms of just buying strawberries to maybe focus on the strawberries that may be in your garden, because we referenced that right now. You know, June-bearing plants are probably getting close. When do we think we're looking at in terms of harvesting for folks?
Well, I think it depends on what type that you have. So we have the June-bearing strawberries, and these are the ones that most, I think, Iowa gardeners are familiar with. These are the ones that have one crop of berries in the late spring, early summer. So in the next couple of weeks, we'll probably start to see these berries starting to ripen up. And that's their, you know, there's like maybe 3 weeks where you have all these strawberries and then you're done for the rest of the season. The other types of strawberries, there are the ever-bearing strawberries. So these are typically have two major flushes of berries. And we would expect to see the first one maybe just a little bit later than the June-bearing ones in early to midsummer, and then another round when temperatures start to cool in the fall, kind of late fall or late summer, early fall. And then you have day-neutral strawberries. And day-neutral strawberries will produce fruit all year with the exception of when it starts to get super hot. So they'll have few berries most of the year. Most of them will start to produce fruit about the same time as ever-bearing would start their first crop. They will kind of relax a little bit when it gets hot because strawberries don't love hot weather. Mm-hmm. And then they'll pick up again in the fall with blooming and fruiting all season. So it kind of depends on which ones you have.
So I have to ask a question. Do each of you have personal preferences in your strawberry plants? Which type are you?
I prefer June-bearing strawberries because they're very productive over 3 weeks or 4 weeks. And then basically you just renovate them and they're set for next year.
Yeah. And I like the day-neutral types because you end up with a few strawberries all the time. I think they're fun to grow in containers sometimes. And the day-neutral ones are well-suited for containers or hanging baskets. And the plants can be really pretty. The flowers are very pretty. Anybody who's grown strawberries knows that the flowers are attractive. And so it's kind of nice to get a few berries every once in a while.
And when we talk about a yield on that, a few berries, you know, generally depending upon, like, per plant, how many are we looking at?
Boy, I think it really depends on how well you manage your strawberries. Okay. If you don't do anything to your strawberries, you may get a handful every once in a while. But if you're really diligent about on the day-neutral and ever-bearing plucking off runners because they're more productive as single plants. If you do a good job of fertilizing at appropriate times and keeping them well watered and have them in full sun, you could have a much larger crop. So strawberries are one of those crops. The more time you put into them, the more you get out of them in many ways.
So you will know based off of how many strawberries you're enjoying, how good of a job you're doing.
Yeah.
Richard, you had mentioned renovation when talking about June-bearing strawberries. And I read some of the information you provided for today. And I'll admit, my eyebrow jumped a little bit when I saw some of the techniques used in renovation. Some of them seem a little,
odd,
destructive.
Yeah. ideally, June-bearing strawberries should be grown in a row. And after they're done bearing, typically what you want to do, the first thing is within a week of the last harvest or picking, go out with a lawnmower and actually mow off the foliage.
And kind of short, too,
very
right?
Very short. Yeah. So you remove all the foliage. And basically you do that for disease control in the future. And then after you do that, you take a tiller or a spade and you narrow that row down to an 8-inch wide strip because June bearers tend to run. And you'd like to keep these in a 2-foot wide row. And so you actually destroy some of the plants. And then after doing that, then you go ahead and fertilize. And then in response to that, they'll leaf out again and start to run. And by fall, you should have a nice 2-foot wide row again. So you're back to normal.
And when you say they start to run, you're referring to the runners. And that's always been a thing that's kind of fascinated me because a runner, it's an offshoot of the root, but it's kind of like a branch and it ties the plants together. Is that accurate?
It's a daughter plant.
Okay.
The mother plant produces its daughter plant. It sends it out and then that daughter plant then roots and you have a new plant. And so very quickly they do that. And by the end of summer, you have a nice 2-foot wide row again.
Mm-hmm. And so a big part of management too is kind of the management of those runners then too.
Right. Yeah. If you don't do that, most people tend not to do that. And so they might have two or three rows and the rows fill in completely, and then you're tiptoeing through the bed trying to pick berries, pull weeds. Very hard to do. If they're in distinct rows, everything is much, much easier.
And I should mention, too, that very quickly we'll be going to the phone line. So if you have a question either about strawberries, anything that we're talking about now, or just any of the plants in your life, 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Again, 866-780-9100. You can also email us, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we were talking about noticing your yields and saying that's a pretty good indicator of how well you've been maintaining your plants. Strawberries are plants that do require a lot of maintenance. Are there things that maybe folks who tried last year or who have tried maybe this year who are new to this, are there things that are often overlooked for maintenance of strawberry plants?
I think one of the biggest things is weeds.
Absolutely, weeds.
One of the hardest things to deal with in a strawberry patch are weeds. And if you let the weeds go, you get yourself into a world of trouble. And often when we hear of really weedy patches, especially with perennial like quackgrass and perennial weeds, our recommendation is to just start over because it is so hard to maintain. The weeds are very competitive with these plants, and it's so hard to separate strawberries and weeds from each other. I think the number one advice I'd have is to stay ahead of the weeds in your strawberry patch.
Mm. And as you said, it could be as drastic as literally having to start over at that point.
Yep.
And so folks who are listening to this right now who might say, you know, I'm not afraid of a little work. I don't mind being a hobbyist. We're getting we're talking about June-bearing plants, you know, starting to bear fruit. So we're a little bit late on the curve. When is typically the best time to get started for somebody who wants to get into strawberry growing?
You might want to actually prepare the site the year before, maybe in late summer, early fall, where you choose a good site, a well-drained soil, full sun. And if you have vegetation at the site, destroy that, work up the soil, and then promptly plant in the spring. Ideally, you'd like to plant probably sometime from mid-April to early May. That would be the ideal time.
Well, and another thing that I noticed in reading through the material you provided, something that really surprised me, speaking of preparing the site, you should definitely avoid sites where other strawberries have grown, but also tomatoes, potatoes, peppers within the last 3 years. Is that right?
If you can, because they're basically related plants, and they can catch the same diseases, and so it might be actually in the soil.
Excellent. We've got some callers on the line, but plenty of room for your questions, 866-780-9100. You can also email us, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. I'm Jason Burns, in for Charity Nebbe. It's Talk of Iowa on Iowa Public Radio. I'm Jason Burns, in for Charity Nebbe. It's Hort Day. Aaron Stile and Richard Giron are here, and we have been talking strawberries and probably why we've elicited at least a couple of strawberry-related questions, including a call from Linda in Cedar Rapids about strawberries. So, Linda, good morning, and welcome to Talk of Iowa. What's your question?
Hi. I have a question. You mentioned the stain-neutral strawberries. I live in a house where I'm not allowed to plant a garden. So I'm wanting to have strawberries, and I have these little flower boxes that you put over your railing. If I grow those and I cut off the runners, I've always been told that strawberries don't produce the first year that well, and you're not really supposed to let them do that. So anyway, how would I overwinter them so that the next year I could have more strawberries?
Yeah, that would be a concern or problem. Typically, you can't leave them outside. If you do, most likely the soil temperatures within the container will get so cold that they will damage or destroy the plants. So they have to be in a protected location. If you had, for example, maybe a unheated garage, they could go in there probably in mid to late November and be okay. But it should be a cool place, somewhat protected. But indoors in the house would not be acceptable, no.
Mm-hmm.
So I could just pull that flower box off the railing and put it in my garage. How often would you water them over the winter?
I would check them periodically. You probably shouldn't have to water very often. I would probably guess maybe every 2-3 weeks. Yeah. Not very often, just to keep them from basically shriveling up and dying. But it should be very cool, and they should be probably okay in that garage.
Yeah. The nice thing, too, about the day-neutral cultivars is that while we recommend that you don't allow plants to be, or strawberries to produce the the first year on June-bearing varieties. The day-neutral ones, you can clip flowers off for the first part of the season, but by July, you can start letting them produce. So you can get strawberries the same year you plant if you plant day-neutral varieties.
And could I still do it this year?
Yeah, you probably could. And you'll likely be able to find some of those in greenhouses and nurseries still.
Okay, thank you guys so much.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Linda. Linda, of course, called us at 866-780-9100. Still space for a few of your questions, either about strawberries or about any of the plants that are in your life. We have an email question that is slightly on topic to Christine. Just moved to the Iowa City area. She says, we just moved to the Iowa City area last fall, and I can't find anywhere close to pick my own strawberries. She says, I always went to Furley Farms in Clear Lake several times in the strawberry season. She says it's therapeutic, so she is definitely one of the people who doesn't mind the work. But she says, but calling around Iowa City, the growers say that Asian beetles have decimated their crops so that no more are growing. Do you have any ideas?
I would assume there are farmers in the area, and I would check the Iowa Fruit and Vegetable Growers Association webpage, where they do list growers that actually do have strawberries.
Excellent. And we have another question about berries. This one about, looks like, red raspberries and strawberries. This is from Anne in Williamsburg. Anne, what is your question? Welcome to Talk of Iowa.
My first question is on strawberries. And so if I wanted to create using berry plants, strawberry plants from my old bed, my June bearing, when do I do that? I'll just let you answer.
Okay. Now, we would strongly suggest that you buy new plants. And we say that because if you have an old patch, if your neighbor has an old patch, if it's been there 3, 4, or 5 years, oftentimes over time, they become disease infested. And it may not be apparent by looking at them. So we would typically suggest that you buy new ones, because if you buy them from a reputable garden center, mail order company, they should be certified disease-free, virus-free. And you want to start off on a good place.
Okay. Okay, the second question is on red raspberries. I have a bed of red raspberries that I mow off sometime in the winter, and then I use these for fall bearing, and I guess I haven't treated them properly. I've just let them grow up. I haven't thinned them like I do my June bearing red raspberries, which I think I got a PDF from Extension on how to do that. So anyway, these have grown. It's about a foot and a half wide bed.
Mm-hmm.
The plants are a foot and a half to 2 foot tall, thick. At this point, do I go in and thin them to your what's on that PDF?
Yeah, typically, typically you don't have to. If you're dealing with a fall bearing variety, and if you cut them down to the ground in late winter or early spring, you can basically allow them to grow and not really have to thin them. But if you have let's say a summer-bearing red raspberry, and you go out there and prune them in late winter, you do remove the small spindly canes because they're not very productive. But dealing with a fall-bearing variety, if you're cutting them back to the ground, thinning typically is not necessary.
They're really thick, but
and
that's okay.
That's okay.
okay.
If they're very that just means they're very, very healthy.
So congratulations.
All right. Well, they fall over. They're so thick when they get berries on.
Now some people will, in that case, what some people will do, they'll put up a temporary trellis. And what they'll use are some nice sturdy wooden stakes or metal fence posts and twine. And they'll put those up so that when they grow and they start to get a little bit heavy, especially with the fruit, they won't flop on the ground. They'll rest on the twine.
So, Anne, hopefully that helps.
Okay. Yes, Thank you.
You bet. Thanks so much for your call. Anne, of course, called us at 866-780-9100. Again, 866-780-9100. Would love to take questions about any of the plants you want to talk about this morning. Donetta in Des Moines has a question about lilac bushes and trimming. Donetta, thank you so much for calling Talk of Iowa.
Thank you for taking my call. I want to know when one can safely trim lilac bushes, a new one.
So typically we recommend trimming any lilacs right after they've finished flowering, and I would assume yours have finished flowering in the last couple weeks, so you could probably do it now.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Yeah, and I will say that I'm not a fan. I wouldn't use a hedge clippers to trim my lilacs. I would prune out older canes near the base of the plant. It helps maintain a more natural-looking shrub. And, when you get out the hedge clippers on something like lilac, you can really negatively impact flowering accidentally into the future.
Okay.
Plus, you get, a bubblegum-shaped plant, which lilacs just don't do.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you don't trim the top of the bush that has an odd shape because one part of it is at a weird angle.
Right. The ideal situation would be to remove a branch back to its origin. If you can do that all the way down to the ground, that's great. If you have like one wayward branch, you can prune that back to where it comes from on the main branch. That's okay too. But typically, if you want to maintain a nice shape, a nice natural shape in lilac, the best way to do that is to remove a few of the older canes at the base of the plant.
Thank you.
Yes.
I will get on that tomorrow.
We've got your weekend plans figured out. Thank you so much, Donetta.
All right. Thank you.
866-780-9100 is the number to call. Again, 866-780-9100. Getting a lot of great email questions as well at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Art from Edgewood says, an old nurseryman in the area recommends that no mulch be used for newly planted trees. His explanation is that the soil is moist, and as a result, the roots of the tree do not grow deep in search of water, leaving a shallow-rooted tree. Is there any truth to that?
I would disagree.
Okay.
Actually, tree roots are quite shallow. The vast majority of a tree's roots are up in the top 12 to 18 inches of soil. So they actually don't go that deep. What they do is they grow out horizontally.
Uh-huh.
So they have a very long root system, but not a very deep root system. And when you plant a tree, the biggest thing that you need to do is to keep that soil ball moist that first year or two. And if you don't, the tree may not do well, could actually die. And if you mulch, that helps conserve soil moisture. So mulching actually is very good. Now, when you do mulch, don't make a volcano mulch. We have this very, it shouldn't look like that.
Right.
It should be about 3 to 4 inches maybe in depth. And just around the trunk, leave that space empty, bare. Maybe 3 or 4 inches, and that's all you need to do.
Okay, so it sounds like the common references and wisdom turns out to be right, and sometimes free advice is worth what you pay for it in this instance. So, thank you for the question there, Art from Edgewood. Have another question. Let's see. Emily in State Center says, we have about a dozen blue spruce trees that have succumbed to disease.
Mm-hmm.
If we have these trees removed, could I have them mulched and use that mulch in my flower beds? She said, I would like to replace the blue spruces with 2 or 3 deciduous shade trees. Do you have any suggestions on those? Ideally, she would like some nice fall color, but she doesn't want a messy tree. No maples or oaks is what she said.
Oh, geez.
Degree of difficulty jumped on this one a bit.
Going back to using the Colorado spruce as mulch, they can use it. Yes, they might be diseased, but it only affects the blue spruce or Colorado spruce. It's not going to affect other plants like flowers, other trees or shrubs. So they can use it. As far as a good shade tree, that's not an oak.
Or a maple.
Or a maple.
Or an ash.
That has good color.
So there you go. And
has good color. That's a stretch because there are some nice shade trees, Oaks and maples are very good, and they have good color. For example, the sugar maple, the black maple, very good fall color. The red oak has very good fall color. The white oak has good fall color. They're kind of staples in the landscape, and they perform well in Iowa. But yes, they do drop things, and actually all trees drop things at some point, mm-hmm. whether it's flowers or fruit or something like that. So a completely clean tree is kind of a desire, but I don't think it's reality.
Gotcha.
So I would still look at maples and oaks. I would look at also lindens. They're very, very reliable performers. Honey locust. Hackberry, it's kind of a tough tree, not very pretty, but it's very reliable. And so I kind of like it in that regard.
You sell it so well, Richard.
but it's reliable and it's tough.
Yeah.
And yes, it doesn't have very good fall color. It has no fall color. And it doesn't have pretty flowers, but it's very reliable. I like reliability.
I would add to the list Kentucky coffee tree. I would also add some of the newer varieties of hybrid elm that mimic our American elm but are resistant to Dutch elm disease. And the weird one I'll add to the list that does have good fall color, if you can find it, is black tupelo. Or the Nyssa, which does have a really wonderful fall color, but isn't always easy to find.
Right. It's kind of hard to transplant somewhat.
For that reason, it's
kind of hard to find. But the fall color can vary from kind of a yellow orange to almost a reddish purple. Mm-hmm. Very pretty.
Very nice.
Very, very pretty tree. So lots of good suggestions. Hopefully that helps. Let's go to the phones at 866-780-9100. Again, 866-780-9100. We have Michael in Iowa City. Michael, I understand you have a question about ash trees.
Yes, I'm sorry I don't have any berry questions.
Well, that's all quite all right.
I have ash tree questions. I have, I think these trees were planted about 15 years ago. And the one is about a foot across at the base, or maybe more. The roots keep growing up through the lawn. And we tried cutting away one of the roots, and part of the tree died. So that didn't work. So I don't know, should we spread dirt over it or just let it go?
I would just let it go. Certain trees tend to have surface roots. And actually, maples tend to be the most prone to that, where the roots are very shallow, and that's true for all trees, but especially on the maples. And as they grow, they get bigger and bigger, and oftentimes they pop up above the ground.
Yeah.
Typically, my suggestion is to simply ignore them as best you can, mow around them as best you can. I have a maple, surface roots. I know where they are. I have to be very careful mowing around them, and I do that. Another option would be to, if you don't want to mow around them, maybe remove the grass and put a mulch around the tree where you don't have to worry about that. But as far as covering them, you could, but that's only a temporary solution where they would continue to grow and over time they would emerge from the ground again. So it's only a temporary thing. Now, if you really buried them, let's say you brought in like a foot of soil, to really bury them, make sure they never come up, well, you might end up killing the tree because the tree roots are near the surface because that's where they get water and nutrients, but there's also a little bit of air between the soil particles, and so they can breathe. And if you cover the root system with a foot of soil, they're going to be buried so deeply that some of the roots basically suffocate and die, and the tree may die. So that's not a good thing either. So,
no.
Okay.
Michael, hopefully that helps.
I appreciate the advice.
You bet. Thanks for calling. Michael called 866-780-9100. Lots of calls coming in now. We'll go to Melissa in Fort Dodge. Melissa, welcome to Talk of Iowa. I understand you have a shady front yard.
Yes, I have a really shady front yard. We redid our border, and it's like a really small border. And it's rock landscaping, and we're doing two-column planters. I was wondering what type of plant would be good for a planter. I kind of want just green foliage. I don't want any flowers, but I haven't been able to find any plants for that.
For a shady situation, green foliage in a tall container, the first thing that comes to mind is a simple like fern, like a Boston fern. They look exceptionally well in baskets or tall containers because of the arching growth habit. And, of course, no flowers there at all. Other things that look nice in the shade aren't necessarily green, but things like caladium can do very nicely. Different types of begonias are easy to find and do really well in the shade in those kinds of containers. And there are a few perennials that you can put in containers. I mean, you could put a hosta in the container if you wanted to. It wouldn't overwinter very well, but sometimes you can find a hosta for $3, and that could work really well in that situation.
I do have a bunch of hostas that were just on the property when we bought our property. Could I possibly put them in the planter and then replant them, like when comes fall?
Yes.
In the ground?
Yes, absolutely.
Would that save them a little bit better?
Hosta is a great candidate for something like that.
Great. Thank you so much, Melissa. Appreciate the phone call. It is, of course, Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, more of your questions, 866-780-9100. It's Talk of Iowa on Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Jason Burns, in for Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day. Aaron Stile, Richard Duran lending their expertise as we started the hour talking about strawberries, but we've talked about trees and lilac bushes and all plants in between, and are taking your questions at 866-780-9100. We'll go now to Robbie in Ackley, who has a question about pear tree maintenance. Robbie, welcome to Talk of Iowa. What's your question?
Hello. How are you guys today?
Doing well. Thanks.
I have a pear tree that, to my knowledge, has never been tended to. And it doesn't bear fruit consistently. And I'm wondering what kind of care it needs in order to achieve that.
Well, what I would probably do is, at this point, wait till next year and go out in late March, early April, and do some pruning. And I would
I would
remove basically any broken branch, any dead branch, any branch that is hanging too low. So basically remove what I would consider to be branches that are kind of defects or unwanted.
Okay.
I would also prune out any branches that grow kind of inward or upward rather than more outward. Okay. So kind of corrective pruning. And I would leave it at that. And then if you need to do additional pruning, I'd wait and do it the following year. And that might mean if you have a really, really thick, dense tree, maybe a little bit of thinning to kind of open it up a little bit the next year.
Okay, awesome. And then I had another question about strawberries. I'd been told earlier this year that I couldn't plant yet. And now I'm wondering, is it too late for me to start?
It's not too late to start. Hopefully, if you have a site that's basically ready to go, I would see what you could find locally. It may be kind of hard to find plants at this point, but if you can find some nice, healthy-looking plants, if you have a site ready to go, you can still do it. But I would do it as soon as possible.
All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you very much for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number. Bill from Coralville has a question about white clover in a bluegrass lawn. So, Bill, welcome to Talk of Iowa.
Thank you. Yes, white clover, I believe Trifolium reptans coming into a bluegrass yard. Is that something we should be worried about? And if so, what can we do? And if there's any organic way of treating it besides the chemical.
Okay. Well, people have different opinions on white clover. Some people don't like it at all. Other people are very tolerant of it and allow it to grow. So it kind of depends upon you. As far as if you don't like it and want to get rid of it, you typically have to use a broadleaf herbicide of some type. I don't know of a good organic way of doing it. You really can't pull it out or dig it out very well. So you typically have to use a herbicide. And you may have to do it maybe 2 or 3 years in a row in that the white clover is a very prolific seed producer, and so you could go out this fall, for example, apply a broadleaf herbicide and kill it, but I'm going to assume next spring it's going to come back from seed. So you may have to do this for 2 or 3 years. So it all kind of depends upon do you like it or you don't you? So
can you use your typical weed and feed in the spring or fall on that?
I think I would be more inclined to use a spray, and I would use a product that has probably two or three different compounds in it, things like 2,4-D, MCPP, dicamba, and I'd use a spray where you can basically spot treat it. Just put it where you need to do it.
Okay. Would it eventually eliminate the bluegrass from that area, or just sort of grow in tandem with one another?
Well, they kind of grow tandem in one another, but I will say that they can get awfully thick themselves and kind of crowd out the grass to some extent. So it kind of depends upon the situation. Another way to maybe deal with this would be to fertilize the yard, because if the yard is growing well, it can probably compete with the clover. If the grass is not doing well, if the soil is not very fertile, then the clover tends to dominate more so.
In other words, boost the nitrogen content of the soil a little bit.
For the grass's sake, yes.
Yeah. Okay, great. Thank you so very much.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate the call, Bill. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Michael in Gilmore City has a question about a peach tree. Michael, welcome to Talk of Iowa. What's your question? Michael, are you still there? May have to try back again later. We'll go instead to Rick from West Des Moines. Rick, I understand you have a question about Colorado Bruce spruce. Welcome to the show.
Thank you much. Yes, sir. I've got a perfect specimen of a Colorado blue spruce that's about head high, and it was transplanted with a big tree spade two seasons ago. So it's been through two winters. This is the second summer with seven other trees, and they're all doing great. But the blue spruce this spring, I noticed on the very top sprig, it looks dead. It's showing new growth everywhere else, but should I clip that off at the very top, or will that hinder future growth, or is this a bigger problem that it's some kind of disease that could be spreading? And if so, what do I need to do to treat that? Now, I don't want to lose the tree. It's really, really beautiful.
I do not believe it's a disease problem, okay? And I'd be inclined to wait a few more weeks just to make sure that it's not, it still might be alive possibly, but maybe not very strong, and so it still might possibly put on some new growth. So I'd be inclined to wait. Now, if by, let's say, mid-June or so, there's still no life in that shoot or stem, I'd probably prune it off, cut it off at that point. The tree will most likely develop, in response to that, maybe two or three new leaders. And if it does, leave them this year, and then early next spring, select one, what you consider to be the best, the strongest, the most vigorous. Keep that one and remove the other ones.
Okay, great. Yeah, I'd heard that if you cut the top sprig, that will limit the growth. So just let it go ahead and grow two or three and then pick the best one.
Right.
Okay, super. Thank you.
Perfect. Thanks for the call, Rick. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. We go from Rick to Rick as in an interesting coincidence. Another Rick in Rock Island has a question about mulch. Rick, what is your question? Welcome to Talk of Iowa. May not be on the line any longer, so we will go to the next. Tom in Hemming has a question about pruning oak trees this time of year. So, Tom, welcome to Talk of Iowa. What's your question?
Thank you. I've got a very mature 30-plus foot tall pin oak, and I know it's not advisable to trim oaks until winter, but I've got some obvious dead branches, and would it be okay to prune those out now?
I would say if you can wait, well, how big are the branches? If they fall out, are they going to hurt people or property?
No.
Okay, if you can wait, then I would wait.
The problem is after I lose the leaves, I can't tell what's what.
You can prune the dead ones out in late summer. So typically we don't recommend folks prune oak trees like middle of March to about July. So after the July 4th holiday or the kind of the end of the month, you can prune those out in the fall. And because they're dead, that should be no issue.
As an added measure, if you can, immediately after pruning off those branches, take some latex house paint and paint the pruning surface. That's kind of an added measure, because that way, if you do expose some live wood, if you paint it immediately, it's not going to attract the insect that does transmit oak wilt. No way. So that's an added measure.
Okay, very good. Thank you for your time.
You bet. Thanks a lot for the call, Tom. 866-780-9100. Lots of good questions rolling in. We go to Steve from Moline, Illinois. Steve, I understand you have a question about Japanese maples.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Sure can.
I have two Japanese maples that were planted, I believe, originally with the home we bought 3 years ago. They're huge. They're spectacular. I mean, Japanese maples grow so slowly in my experience. But they're different colors. They're planted right next to each other. So for all appearances, it's one tree. But one is green leaf, and the other is the typical Japanese maple red leaf. I tried to identify them if they're two different varieties, although a landscape guy told me that he thought it was a male and female. And so I'm just wondering, I'm just curious to know if there is a male-female that would be a different leaf color, or if they're two different varieties of a Japanese maple.
Yeah,
and I have a follow-up.
Yeah, it's not a male-female thing. That's not how maple trees grow. So
I didn't think so.
Is very much likely to be two different cultivars or two different varieties. Japanese maples freely hybridize, and there are a lot of different varieties out there. So especially if they are seed-source plants, there's a lot of variation that you can see. So it's likely just different varieties of Japanese maple.
Okay, thank you. And then quickly, kind of following up on the previous gentleman's question about pruning, and then you mentioned painting with latex house paint. I've had pros and cons I've heard in terms of spraying that stuff you buy that's kind of a tar, that it's a good idea when to spray a limb after you've pruned it or not. Can you solve that little dilemma?
Right. When you're pruning most trees, the vast majority of trees, there is no need to apply any type of pruning paint or wound dressing to the pruning cut. No reason at all. It doesn't help. That used to be a very, very common practice maybe 20, 25 years ago. But in the case of oaks, that's a special occasion where we want to prevent oak wilt, which is transmitted by an insect. And if you make a pruning cut, there's a little bit of moisture sap that comes to the surface, and it may attract the insect that may be carrying the disease. So if you paint it, that doesn't happen.
Okay, thank you very much, and good program. Great information, guys.
Great. Thank you very much, Steve. Appreciate it. 866-780-9100 is the number. We are hearing from KB, who says he's on the road, I think. KB, question about lawn aeration and grub control. Welcome to the program.
Hey. Morning, guys. How you doing?
Doing well. Thanks.
Good. So, wonderful program. Real quick, I live in the southeast tip of Minnesota, and got a house nested in the bluffs, beautiful area and everything, but my lawn is on a hillside, so I can't roller it to even out all the moguls and everything like that. I heard a few weeks ago on your program about just aerating the tar out of the lawn, like going over it like three or four times to, you know, just get all the plugs up and use that to start evening it out. The other issue I have is that I've had some mold damage. Just they put channels and tunnels and stuff in the bottom part of the hillside, and I'm thinking about after aerating, I'm thinking about putting in some fill dirt. And then I wanted to know what kind of grass seed. I want a quick fix, so I'm going to need something that grows quick, like ryegrass or something, to, you know, get it up and ready, because the hillside will start washing on me. And I was thinking of doing a rye and bluegrass combination on that hillside just to get it to take and start solidifying that soil so it doesn't wash away. Wondering what your input was on that.
I would encourage, as far as seeding, I would encourage you wait until maybe mid-August to do that.
Okay.
That would be a good time to do it in your area. And if it's a sunny area, I would look...
This is south-facing.
Okay. I would look for a mix that is maybe 80% bluegrass, Kentucky bluegrass, and 20% perennial rye. And the perennial rye is in there because it germinates very quickly, giving you some nice cover, but it's... It's not the majority of the grass, so it's not going to take over. The bluegrass will eventually take over if you have at least 80% bluegrass in the mix.
Correct. Okay. Perfect. That's what I needed. And I was right about the aeration as a solution for all my moguls and stuff.
That's your best option, because rolling is actually long term, not good. It's harmful.
Oh, okay, perfect. That's what I needed. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
You bet. Thanks for the call, KB. We now go to Rick in Rock Island, who has a question about mulch. Rick, welcome to Talk of Iowa.
Yeah, good morning. Thank you for taking the call. What I would like to do is transport bulk mulch from the Davenport compost facility to Clinton County, which has ash tree. And I was just wondering if the emerald ash borer could survive in bulk mulch or bag mulch. I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Rick.
The key there is the size as far as how finely they've been chipped. If they've been finely chipped, that's not a concern because that would destroy them. They wouldn't survive long term. So the key there is, if there are big, huge chunks, no. If they've been finely chipped, they should be okay.
Hmm. So lots of concerns with emerald
ash borer.
Size
matters in this case.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. We'll go to Charlie in Cedar Falls. Charlie, thanks for calling Hort Day on Talk of Iowa. What's your question?
I planted a linden tree about 8 or 10 years ago. Looks like it's doing great. It came out of a bucket when I bought it, and I thought I had done a pretty good job with the circular roots, but I just noticed here in the last few weeks that there are some roots growing around the tree up close to the ground surface that look like they're actually going to strangle the tree. You can see it's almost kind of cutting into the bark in the bottom, and I'm wondering if I've got to give up on this tree, or if maybe I can cut them off or ignore them or something.
This is a tough situation. There's not much you can do about it at this point, especially with the tree being so established. So your options are to wait and see. Yeah, is to wait and see. Enjoy the tree as long as you can and see what happens. But pruning out that root isn't going to be a great solution either. So it's kind of unfortunately, we don't have a solution per se to this issue, because there's not anything that we can do short of, you know, removing the tree that removes the issue without severely impacting the health of the tree. So
is there any chance the tree will grow over that root? Because I mean, right now you can see pictures in a few weeks ago, but the I can see that the the bark and that are, down by the roots actually starting to grow over the edge of the root and that. And
it'll look like it's growing over, but it's likely that you still may see some girdling that happens because of this. And it really depends on the situation. Some folks will have this type of situation. The tree will live another 20 years without any issue. And then in other cases, the tree will get girdled off and maybe blow over in a storm or something like that within 5 or 10 years. So it's hard to know for sure how this tree will react to this situation. But what we do know is that we don't have any solution to it, unfortunately.
Yeah, okay. So actually going and maybe cutting a section of the errant root out is probably a bad idea.
Yeah,
that
I would not.
Maybe bring it to a
that would definitely cause a lot of stress on the tree. It's likely I would guess that this tree will live longer with the girdling root than if you damage the tree by trying to cut it out.
Okay, so plant another one nearby and be more careful with the circling root.
Exactly.
Yep. Thank you so much, Charlie. Appreciate the call. And that is pretty much it for the time that we have for today. Sorry for all the calls we couldn't get to. Great questions. Thank you both, Aaron Stile, Richard Drawn. Appreciated your time today.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Talk of Iowa, of course, we'll be back next week with Charity Nebbe. Until then, I'm Jason Burns. Happy Friday.